You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show dedicated to union news, workplace issues and social justice. I'm your host, James Brennan, and I'm broadcasting to you today from the lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders both past and present and recognise the ongoing impact of colonisation across the country. Sovereignty has never been ceded, always was, always will be Aboriginal land. This program is produced by 3CR and distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, where we bring you a weekly wrap of union news, conversations with workers and unionists, and deep dive into workplace issues and social justice. We gratefully acknowledge the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation, whose funding helps to keep workers' stories on the air. Today on the show, we're going to go through some recent union news across the country, and then we'll turn to our feature interview with Philippa Bolt from Australian Services Union to talk about the proposed changes to the SHADS Award, the Social and Community Home Care and Disability Services Award, which is currently at Fair Work Commission and undergoing what are some incredible changes to the workers in that sector for their pay. With workers, if the proposed changes go through, would lose hundreds of dollars per week. But before we get into that interview, let's hear a little bit of union news. At the National Tertiary and Education Union and the Australian Catholic University, last week, the NTU members walked off the job for 2 hours at ACU campuses in Ballarat, Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra and Melbourne. The workers rejected the ACU's offer of a 2.5% annual wage increase, which falls short of the wage price index of 3.4%. They're also fighting for stronger job security, action on workloads and improved rights to flexible work conditions. The NTU drew attention to the fact that the ACU's vice chancellor received a thick $60,000 pay rise last year, equivalent to a 5.8% increase. In Victoria, the Australian Manufacturer Workers Union, AMWU, campaign continues at the Buca Municipal, where workers are pressing for a fair wage increase and clear reclassification structures. They've said they will not accept any dodgy trade-offs. The Transport Workers Union of Australia, TWU members of Armaguard and Prosecure, cash in transit companies in Victoria and Tasmania, registered an overwhelming 99.15% vote in favour of industrial action. That industrial action started earlier this week, and they are implementing indefinite bans on overtime and weekend work. And the dispute stems from breakdowns in negotiations on a new sustainable funding model for the industry. In Tasmania, public sector unions, including the AEU and CPSU and HACSU UWU, are planning coordinated industrial action in the final week of this month. This follows their rejection of the Tasmanian government's offer of a 3% wage increase, proposed as a one-year take-it-or-leave-it deal. Each union will decide on the form of action, likely one-hour stop-work actions. At Bloomfield Coal's Ricks Creek Mine, members of the Mining and Energy Union are entering their third week on strike. The dispute, after 10 months of negotiation, centres on accident pay, which the union describes as an outdated system that unfairly relies on workers chipping in to support injured colleagues. Meanwhile, the company is advertising for scab labour and offering a worse deal than the previous offer, prompting workers to continue to stand firm. In the Northern Territory, the TWU drivers working for CDC Northern Territory in Darwin and Palmerston took 24 hours of strike action. The union reports that 41% of drivers have been attacked at work and 31% within the last 18 months. A massive 85% say they would consider leaving without improvements to their working conditions. The union has not ruled out further industrial action. And workers at GrainCorp sites in Geelong and Portland walked off the job for 24 hours. Their dispute follows breakdowns in negotiations after discovery of systematic underpayments. They're seeking a workable rostering system, safety equipment provisions, and a fair pay rise. And elsewhere across the country, we saw a National Day of Action organised by the ASU, the Australian Services Union, where workers were protesting against the proposed changes to a wage structure that is currently at the Fair Work Commission. That's going to be the main story that we're going to hear a lot more of in today's show. And later this week, there's going to be an ASU Delegates Conference in Melbourne with delegates from Victoria and Tasmania. And the proposed changes to the SHADS agreement is sure to be something that will be discussed at length at that conference. And that's all for union news this week. As we turn now to our main feature story, we're zeroing in on a campaign that matters deeply for thousands of workers in the community services, home care and disability sectors. The SHADS Award, the industrial instrument covering the social, community, home care and disability workers, is under review at the Fair Work Ombudsman. Under the current framework, workers across the sector are classified and paid according to duties, qualifications, responsibilities and experience. But the Fair Work Commission, through its Gender Undervaluation Priority Awards Review, is considering sweeping changes and changes that many in the union warn could reverse hard-won gains from the past. The industry lobby group Australian Industry Group, AIG, has made submissions calling for the substantial reclassification, removal of things such as sleepover allowances, reworking of penalty rates and a unified structure borrowed from another sector, that being the aged care sector. These changes, the ASU argue, would cost workers upwards of $900 from their wage each week. The union estimates that up to 3 in 4 workers in the sector could face reduced pay under the proposal, with specific examples being cited as cuts, like I said, up to $960 for typical roles. While the proposal is being marketed as modernising classifications and addressing undervaluation, the concern is the transitional protections are weak and that workers changing roles or moving jobs will start on lower pay rate, effectively rolling back wages and conditions that were won through the Equal Pay campaign more than 10 years ago. The timing is critical with the sector under pressure from rising demand, increasing complexity of work, heavy regulation and chronic underfunding, while many workers perform more complex duties but remain in outdated classifications. On Thursday the 23rd of October, the ASU called a National Day of Action, Protect Equal Pay, with major rallies held across the country, including Melbourne, Parramatta, Canberra, Newcastle, Sydney, Adelaide and more. The union campaign, branded Skilled, Respected, Equal, connects the current fight to the historic equal pay victory in 2012 and warns that if this review goes backwards, that win could be undermined. In short, this isn't just a negotiation about classification detail. It's a systematic battle over how society values our care work, home support work, youth work and disability services. On today's show, we're going to unpack what the changes could mean in practice, how workers can respond and the strategy for the campaign from the ASU and workers in the sector. The ASU has promised more action both at workplaces and potentially on the streets as well, as they also look to fight this in the Fair Work Commission. And now we have Philippa Bork from the ASU to speak to us about what the union's role is in this campaign and what the proposed changes are and what workers can do both within the sector to fight against it and unionists and workers in other sectors, how they can support. So Philippa, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. And I think, like people who are part of the community sector will be really interested to know and hopefully already a little bit aware of like what's happening in this campaign. But, you know, we have a lot of listeners in across the country that are in lots of different sectors and, you know, is a source where people can find out about different unions and different campaigns and things that are going on. Maybe we can just start by talking about like the ASU and what the Australian Services Union, like who's covered under that union.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. So the ASU is the Australian Services Union. We represent members in industries including social and community services, local government, airlines, clerks, infrastructure including Vic Roads, the CFA, Water Authority. So we have very broad coverage. It does vary from state to state. In Victoria, our branch predominantly represents workers in local government, social and community services, water, infrastructure, and then some small other industries that fall within our rules coverage as well.
Yeah, so a lot of different workers that covering a lot of different areas.
Yeah, really varied. And I think that's one of the things I love about it. You get a very diverse group of members that you get to work with right across the state.
Yeah, and we probably won't get time to kind of talk about it today, but I know you were previously in a role looking at local council and, some pretty exciting things happening with the local councils connecting At the moment?
Yes, that's correct. So I was previously in the local government team, and there is a big campaign that many of your listeners may have heard about to have multi-employer bargaining in local councils. Currently, there are 7 local councils in metropolitan Melbourne that are likely to be covered by the first ever metro multi-employer agreement, and then there's also a regional multi-employer agreement as well, which is an amazing opportunity for workers in the sector to build their power, to negotiate for better conditions, and also to focus on building community services for the local community as well.
And yeah, I guess because a lot of workers may cross over some of those areas as well from local government to the community sector. And I think, you know, that's kind of the main focus of what we're going to talk about today in some of the proposed sort of changes to the SHADS award. Can you, I mean, it is pretty big, the whole thing. I think, I myself like work in the sector as well. And it's been challenging to explain to people, you know, exactly what's going to happen. But essentially there is looking to completely restructure the way that the pay scale works in the sector.
Yeah. And to go back even a little bit further than that, I think it's important to understand what the SHADS award is. So every worker pretty much in Australia is covered by a modern award. That award is the base level or the minimum standards under which a person can be paid and that contains their terms and conditions of employment. In the social and community services space, that award is known as the Social Community Home Care and Disability Services Award. It covers thousands and thousands of workers right across the country. And in particular, in terms of our coverage here in Victoria and Tasmania, it covers our community sector members. So members working in family violence services, members working in alcohol and other drug services, counselling, peer support, financial counselling. It's just a huge expanse of the workforce, but also a workforce and a sector that is intricately linked. As you said, for example, with local government, there is intersectionalities, also community and families, and everyone has some sort of connection in some way with this sector. So it is something that's kind of interwoven into everybody's lives on a day-to-day basis.
And I think one of the ways I've heard it explained is that they're going to be kind of looking at borrowing the model from aged care workers. And, you know, we've seen already over the past few years the kind of the way that is working for workers or not working for workers. Can you explain what that would look like to kind of borrow from another sector?
Yes.
Another industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is happening is the Fair Work Commission is undertaking a review of the SHADS Award, so the Social Community Home Care and Disability Services Award, and looking at it from a gender and evaluation lens. However, we've hit a little bit of a roadblock in that they've gone down some avenue that doesn't quite line up. What the commission is looking at doing is incorporating into the SHADS award a pay structure that has been implemented in the aged care award. And the aged care sector and the community sector are very, very different workforces. The aged care model is very much focused on qualifications. So from the lower level, unskilled or certificate level qualifications, right up through to senior management with your nurses, higher level management in business roles. Whereas in the community services sector, the roles, whilst people are often very highly qualified in many roles, often overqualified for the roles that they might be in, but also there's a lot of workers that have gained experience through their work, having worked in the sector for a very long time, have lived experience as well in the sectors that they're working, and contribute in different ways to the standard qualification-based approach. So the 9-level structure of the aged care system doesn't directly or neatly apply to the workforce, but also the wages in that structure are significantly lower than what is currently applicable in the sector. And what we're seeing from the data is that up to 75% of the workers would take a pay cut if this structure was implemented in the SHADS award. So it is a very big decision that will have very big impacts on the workforce.
And I think some of the information I've seen coming out of the ASU with surveys to union members talks about, you know, high percentages of workers saying that they would have to leave the sector altogether. And, you know, working in the sector, I know it's already really difficult to get people to come into the sector and to start off. You know, there's prohibitive things around, unpaid placement and things like that to get people to kind of change careers. How is this kind of be balanced with like Fair Work's position of putting this new structure in when we already know like how difficult it is for people to be working in the sector?
That's such a good point. It is a low-paid sector. 42% of people who responded to our recent survey said that they would likely have to leave the sector if this was implemented. It is a significant impact that could occur to the workforce. And just in terms of where our position is on this is we had already commenced a campaign which was around recognising the workers as being skilled, respected and equal. So our campaign is skilled, respected, equal. And that is focused on the fact that the current structure in the Shads Award was not fit for purpose in that it was already workers were already very low paid. The classification descriptors, so the way that the work is described in the document itself, were not fit for the workforce that it was supposed to cover. So it was very hard to work out where someone was supposed to sit in that structure already, let alone with these changes. But also we were seeing a lot of people underpaid. But because of the lack of clarity in the structure, it was already very hard to fight for reclassifications or to get workers to a higher level. So, the impacts would be disastrous, frankly, I think, in terms of the broader community and also, in terms of workforce attrition and attraction, it would be disastrous.
And I think you mentioned there the Skilled, Respected, Equal campaign. And my understanding is that was initially around things like, you might go to a position around a case manager role and that is classified in some organizations as a Shads 3 or Shads 4 or Shads 5. And that was about kind of bringing those together to have a standardized position around that as, for example, a teacher might kind of move down those kind of positions and things. Will that kind of be sort of the way that, amalgamating that kind of original concept of the campaign in with what's happening now, will that kind of still be a part of the campaign?
Yes, certainly. We are still of the view that the classification structure, whether it's the existing one, which is currently in the award, or if the provisional one that the Commission's proposed, neither of them are fit for purpose. And certainly there needs to be the ability for, if you're a case manager in one workplace performing a job and then you go and do the same job somewhere else, then you should get paid the same amount of money. It shouldn't be that you take a pay cut because one workplace interprets things slightly differently.
And I wonder, unfortunately, a lot of organisations within the sector don't have an enterprise agreement. But so this is, primarily where their kind of pay structure and things like that are going to come from. But how is it going to affect organisations that do have an existing enterprise agreement if this was to get in?
Good question. So as you said, 80% of workers in the sector do not have an enterprise agreement, which means that they have not been in a position to bargain for improved conditions. The remaining 20% in the sector that do have an enterprise agreement, those conditions are generally tied very closely to the rates in the award. So in terms of the pay specifically, most agreements are highly aligned to that. Very few are significantly above that. The risk will be that most of the work in the community services sector is tendered for in some way for funding. So there would be potentially a bit more of a race to the bottom in the sense that it would be very difficult to negotiate for hire if you were negotiating a future enterprise agreement. But if you're on an existing agreement that potentially is tied to the rates in the award and the award rates change and there isn't a provision in there that factors in that the award rates go backwards, then we're not sure exactly how that will work in terms of people coming into that agreement down the track. So they could potentially come in on the lower rates as well. So there is a bit of work to be done, in any enterprise agreements that we are negotiating right now to make sure that there's kind of a savings provision to prevent anyone from potentially going backwards if the award rates change. But for existing agreements, it'll depend on the provisions themselves.
And I wonder, what is the actual process like at the moment? So these submissions are happening in Fair Work Commission and, the ASU has kind of worked with people in the sector to gather statements and things about how it'll affect people in the sector. What would the process kind of look like for it to either be accepted or rejected?
That is a big question. So at the moment, it's going through a legal process at the Fair Work Commission. Unfortunately, that has been a very rushed process at the Commission. We had asked for a considerably more lengthy time for us to be able to put the appropriate proposals together in terms of what a structure could look like for the sector and to be able to work with members, delegates and also employers across the sector to ensure that whatever was the result of a classification structure review would actually reflect the workers and the work being done. Unfortunately, the timeframes given by the Commission didn't allow a really thorough go-through. We did have an amazing team right across the country. Our national office was coordinating a big team of industrial officers to do a lot of work on this. And there were amazing submissions put in earlier in September to respond to the provisional decision from the Commission, which was introducing this terrible structure. I would encourage listeners to Google gender-based undervaluation case, priority awards review, because there's a whole lot of materials in there. We've also been coordinating with employers who have been very approachable on this. So we have alliance partners for the Skilled Respected Equal campaign who have been putting in submissions as well. And then other employers and peak bodies have too. In terms of the next steps, there is listings later this month in the Fair Work Commission for hearing about this matter. In terms of when the decision will be handed down, it really is uncertain. I understand that the Commission is hoping to hand it down very soon. However, the volume of materials that have been provided to the Fair Work Commission is pretty enormous. It's pretty amazing to see. I mean, we had just under 80 members provide witness statements. That is incredible. And thanks again to them. But also other organisations have provided huge amounts of materials to be considered. So I hope, and we are hoping that the Commission takes that seriously, because the value of that information cannot be understated. You know, hearing from community sector workers about what their jobs are is so important for any decision making when it comes to the wages of those workers. And then, I mean, in terms of implementation, for example, potentially if the Commission decided to hand down a decision before Christmas, there is a possibility it could be, you know, they could say that it should be implemented mid-year. However, we would be arguing against that. And if the decision was not favourable for workers, our campaign would not end there.
And I guess before we kind of go on to talk about, you know, the fight back itself and what people can do both in the sector and outside of the sector to be involved in that, I wanted to kind of go back a little bit, and I think it was around 2012 was the campaign for the Equal Pay campaign, which I'm sure a lot of listeners were a part of or will remember, you know, as something part of their kind of union education that they've taken on or that they were kind of, yeah, in some way involved in it. I feel like that, you know, that's a great way that we can kind of think about how we can win this time. Yeah, I don't know if you can share some thoughts about, like, the union's kind of involvement in that and what kind of lessons we could learn from that for today's fight.
That is such a good question. And I was at uni at the time, but I remember going to rallies with my mum, who is a unionist, and being part of that campaign, even though I wasn't directly involved. But that campaign was a long campaign. It took, you know, between 2007 and 2012 for us to get a win. That was based on so that basically was a campaign to win equal pay for the community services sector. We ultimately won equal pay. It took a considerable amount of campaigning to do that, and the mass actions and the engagement and visibility of workers was what got that off the ground. These things don't just happen because we do really good legal submissions, and our legal submissions are great. We have an awesome team. But what really matters is the workers. And I think as a union program, people understand that, you know, union power and grassroots power is what gets the change. So with that case, won significant pay rises for the community services sector that were rolled out over an 8-year period after 2012. And they delivered huge increases between 23 and 43% to the sector. So significant increases. However, the issue now we are facing is that those increases haven't kept up. So we're kind of now at the point where we won incredible increases back then and made huge differences to people's lives, which, again, can only be attributed to the member power on the ground. But we know we can win because we've done it before and the momentum was incredible. And so now it's about coming back to the table and saying we are going to not stand for that being taken away. We're not going to accept equal pay going backwards to lose anything that we won back in 2012. But we also know that we need to look forwards and think about what we need to save, but then what we need to build on. So it's not just about stopping what the Fair Work Commission is doing, but also about building on what we currently have and making sure that the wages that were already not sufficient and not good enough for a sector that is so highly qualified and skilled and incredible, they should be improved from what they are currently.
And I think in my time of, you know, being involved in both working in the sector and being part of different union work and things as well. It feels like this last decade or so, there's been a huge upturn in industrial actions within the community sector as well. I feel like even a little bit of a shift in the way that the ASU has kind of supported those campaigns and really encouraged members to kind of be a part of that. Membership has grown. I wonder, like, if you can speak about that and, like, what the kind of things that organisers are reporting back about actions and things that are happening in workplaces.
That's a really good question. I think that is true. We have been involved in a lot of industrial action and a lot of campaigning in the last few years. I have been in this role for only 5 months. However, in terms of growth and action and activism, we've seen it grow exponentially over the last few years, and it is really fantastic to see. As in this role, I think it's really important for members to be the driving force of what we do. And that to me is really important, that member voices are heard and that delegates who are, you know, the face of the union on the ground are able to kind of guide that and be the representatives of the members. So in terms of activism, I think it is really important that we do kind of go back to that style of grassroots member power and organising for power. Whilst we can, you know, and we do have amazing teams in the union that do kind of individual support and individual representation, we also have been focused on dedicating a lot more resources to the campaign side of things in the last couple of years. So we've had a big change in direction in the last 2 years in particular to focusing on organising for power, which is going to be the thing that will deliver the biggest outcomes, the best outcomes for members. So it is about increasing our overall ability to influence outcomes collectively and stand together as much as possible.
Thanks so much for joining us on the show, Philippa.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Philippa for joining us on today's show. And thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Stick Together Podcasts via 3CR websites and wherever you normally listen to podcasts. If you're involved in a workplace justice issue, a campaign, or anything else, you'd like to have your story shared with us, you want to be a guest, or you'd like to let us know about something we can cover on Union News, please get in touch with us at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com. This program is made possible with support by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. And to the listeners, thank you for tuning in. I've been your host, James, and please continue to support community radio so we can keep getting these stories on the air. And remember, whatever you do, wherever you go, there's a union for you. Until next time, stick together. And to finish off this week's show, we're going to hear a track from David Rovix with Song for the Eureka Stockade.
From every corner of the world, they came from all around. When in 1851, they struck gold upon the ground. Every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was rule by brutish thugs, discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The gold was getting scarcer and cops were getting worse. The diggers burned their licenses and vowed to end this curse. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The crown tried to divide them, giving preference to some. The diggers wouldn't have it, they said it's all of us or none. They built a stockade while the redcoats massed nearby, and they heard the miners shouting, "We're ready now to die." The rebel miners waited for whatever lay in store, and on one December morning in 1854, the redcoats attacked the camp. Dozens there would fall amongst these brave gold diggers who'd risen to the call. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. army thought it was over and things go their way. But when 15,000 miners rallied a month later on the day, the Crown conceded everything, all of their demands. They'd want an end to license fees, the right to vote and land. So here's to Joe and Charlie, Waller and the rest. They drew the battle lines and put Crown rule to the test. The diggers may have lost the battle, but they quickly won the day. And those shots fired in Victoria were heard 10,000 miles away. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the Southern sun.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.